There has been so many obstacles and challenges thrown in our way, and every single one of them, we've never dwelled on it. We just went, okay, that's fine. Move on. Next. What can we do with that? Okay, who can we talk to next that's going to change something else?
My name's Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast. I am in Dublin, Ireland, currently at Dogpatch Labs, and I am with an incredible woman in tech named Tanya. Hello.
Hello. How are you? Lovely to have you here.
Oh my God. I am so excited. First of all, I've been able to hang out with Tanya just for like a little bit just now, and I think she's the coolest. Like, I want to be friends with her.
I am seriously gushing. But as I said, we'll see by the end of this conversation if she still thinks that.
No, you're just, you're sitting around Tanya, you feel like, you're gonna think this is so funny. You feel like she's aloe, like soothing, and just like makes everything better in the most natural way, you know, like not toxic whatsoever, and just like healing on every last little bit of your soul, and like repairs like the bruised, like she's awesome. Yeah.
Wow, that's actually, I am so glad that that's recorded so I can play it to my husband and see if he thinks the same.
So Tanya, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell me about your company.
Yeah, sure. My name is Tanya Grimson. I am the CEO and also co-founder of Maven 46. And Maven 46 is an interactive fashion, beauty and lifestyle magazine, but our point of difference is that it is completely shoppable, but it's also data driven. We went live, as they say, in kind of early 2015, but we were in kind of beta mode for the first 6 months of that. And for us, it was really about, when I've been working in the publishing industry for 16 years.
Right.
I've worked in every facet of editorial, TV, radio, PR, and also fashion editor of various different publications. And my business partner is an architect turned photographer as well, and she's a mighty force as well to reckon with. And she owns this huge multimedia space in Dublin and also has launched a fine art photography magazine. But we, most importantly, had been working together for 10 years as a creative duo. And what we discovered is that when it came to, not only was there limitations in terms of the print magazine, but it was more about like, how can we do something with a point of difference? How can we bring something to the digital space? Because the digital space has become so crowded and become so noisy. And what we discovered is that although there's multiple competition out there, there wasn't many people that were doing things that sort of treated content with respect and in the same aesthetic as a print magazine. So we wanted to almost take the idea of bringing a print and bringing it online, and not translating or not diluting it in the sense that a lot of print magazines, when they do the digital version,
right,
it's a lot more diluted, and it doesn't have the same ethos or the same aesthetic as it does with a print magazine. So we started with that. That was the backbone. But then we also realized, and it was more of a, I suppose, a practical issue, that when I was working in magazines, people were constantly asking me, where did you get that? Where do I find that? And a lot of the problem was that it was a lot of the information was disingenuous, and the fact that could have potentially been a sample.
Right.
So by the time it actually got to the shop, it never existed. So we started thinking about that again and looking at content and commerce and why there was such a disparity between the two and why there was a disconnect between them. So that was the very first thing that we wanted to do. We wanted to remove the obstacles between content and commerce, and we wanted to make that user experience as seamless as possible. So, for example, when we create our own editorials and our own fashion shoots, we wanted the people to interact with us in a 360 degree. So whether it was behind the scenes, but literally they could shop the model's face. So if you touch on the model's face, you can buy the products that we've actually used. So that there was that transparency about everything that we did. And in terms of the clothes, it's not about a link in an article that brings you to the shop front and then you still have to sift through 1,000 different products to find it. We wanted to make sure that if you clicked on that
blouse that the model is wearing or anything that we feature in any of our content, that you could buy it immediately. So that was the very first thing. And believe it or not, that took a really long time in terms of the functionality to make that experience as seamless as possible. And also from a logistical point of view as well, because we had to make sure that anything that we used, because we create the content ourselves, was actually available and ready to buy at that time. But then as we started, we ticked that box. It worked really well. We started looking at, again, the market and where the market was at. And what we started realizing, again, it was that non-ability to kind of push through that noise. And there was a lot of irrelevancy. And I found that when I was looking at other platforms and I was looking for content that would engage me, I found it very, very difficult to find anything that I liked. I had to go through a lot of tabloid, a lot of celebrity, and a lot of regurgitated content that you could find on multiple sites. And nothing really topical or engaging or even unique. So we started thinking about this in detail in terms of how can we get that message across? How can we get that relevancy? How can we push through that? And data was the answer.
What inspired you to become a founder? Like, when did you first fall in love with business and technology?
Well, I think because of the fact that I was, number one, it's kind of two questions. Number one, I was always working for myself. I think my dad was an entrepreneur. My sister works for herself. I don't know whether it's in the family. I've worked in various different publishing companies, and I just really hated actually working for other people. I didn't like the lack of control, to be honest. So for me, it was always about, I knew I was going to do something, and I always knew that I probably was always going to launch my own magazine, but that wasn't good enough anymore for me. I wanted to do something that was innovative. I've always been a bit of a geek as well. I love technology, always have. And, you know, and it's funny, even though you do one path in life, I think there's another path that's secretly underneath, and I didn't even realize that it existed so strongly inside of me until I started getting into it. And the more that I started researching into what we're doing, and the more I got absorbed into it, and it's become addictive, to be honest. And I didn't realize I actually had a real aptitude for it. So it's become part of, like, the fundamental part of me now. I can't imagine living my life doing anything else other than working in technology and merging the two of them together, because what I love about it is not only the absolutely non-limitations of what we do, but when it comes to data and what we can do with it in terms of from a creative point of view, I'm just hooked on it, because it's so interesting to be able to kind of, when you work in publishing and you're looking at outside factors and you're looking at trends and you're determining it by what? Street style, or you're determining it by fashion shows, but there's no sense of real tangible information. And then I heard about this company in the UK called Edited as well, and it's a retailer that is using big data. And they started correlating all the different SKUs from the different retailers a couple of years ago. And I just thought it was absolutely fascinating. And they were doing it from a retail point of view, so they could determine what was actually selling and not selling.
Right.
And then it basically, with ASOS, I think it increased their sales by about 200% in a year. But that idea, I thought then, how can we take that from a curation point of view? And then that's when it started getting really interesting. And the more I thought about it, and the more we would have a conversation with somebody, and they were intrigued by the idea, because data had been, to that point, nearly almost, you know, singularly used for financial, for banking. But the idea of using data to drive a human connection was still very in its infancy. And that's like 2 to 3 years ago. It's taken this long to kind of be on this journey with us. So, and it's funny now, I think, you know, especially going into 2017, the whole thing about the media space is that you have to be able to use data with storytelling. It's the future. And we're already there. And that's really interesting for us because, you know, I think even Condé Nast have secured this huge amount of funding as well for looking at sort of targeting for advertising using data. And this has been our idea for years, you know, but it was kind of, and even though we didn't have a background in it, it was just something that you identify in a market and you see where you can find your space within it. And you're really, and I know it's a cliche when they say that businesses are founded out of problems and you're trying to find a solution, but that was purely it for us. It was about how do we make our mark in this overcrowded space? And the logical solution was understand our audience, give them more of what they want. And from a founder point of view, it just made complete sense that it was, I think, the natural evolution as well, that myself and Agata were going to go into business together, because we know each other so well. We're best friends. But also from a business point of view, we have exactly the same work ethic. We have the same ambition, and we also have the same dog-mindedness, stubbornness, but also the ability to understand, like, it's not a power thing between the two of us, and that's so important.
Where did you guys meet each other?
We, believe it or not, she had moved to Ireland. She was working as an architect, and she got introduced to me as a photographer, a burgeoning photographer in Ireland. And she had done no fashion photography, but her aesthetic in terms of her visuals and her architecture photography was just incredible. And basically, that was it, really. And I did her very first photo shoot with her, and that was it. 10 years later, we have worked for brands all over the world, and we've flown everywhere together and worked together. But it was more the fact that she's got such a business mind as well. So I wouldn't have jumped into this kind of idea with anybody. Like, it was an absolute perfect fit. And I think she's stronger in certain areas and I'm stronger in certain areas. And I think that's the best part of having the best part of a combination. Right. You know, you can rely on each other for
certain
things.
Tell me, when was Maven 46 founded?
Early 2015.
Oh, cool. And and have you raised money?
We've raised a certain amount of money, and we're closing a deal right now after the Web Summit. Oh my God, I know. Like, you know,
I'm just, from the Web Summit?
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys that don't know, Web Summit is this huge conference in Dublin. It's very significant. I think it was created in 2013.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, it was in Dublin, and it moved to Lisbon this year.
It's not here anymore?
Not anymore.
What? No,
it was too small. Dublin was too small, unfortunately.
Let's pull it back. So you attended the Web Summit in Lisbon
this year,
and that is where you found your investor or potential investors?
I'm going to say very close to.
But is investors or partners?
Investor.
I mean, amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Knock on wood.
Yes.
That works out.
But we met her the first time last year in the first Web Summit.
Oh, in Dublin. Oh, cool. Yeah.
So it was, I think it's, sometimes it's nearly a year in progress. And then it was kind of we organized to meet again in this time in Portugal. We got talking again and it's better this time. It's for more. So
that's so cool.
Yeah. So it's fantastic. And we're in deals with we're in conversations with lots of people, but it's finding investment, funding, like the whole series is just so time consuming.
Right.
As a startup.
I know.
It really is.
One of my original mentors told me, she's like, it's like a full-time job. Get ready.
It is. Yeah. And it's complicated and it's complex because investors want you to be able to have achieved certain milestones. But in order to be able to get the milestones, you need the investment. And you also need to be able to have a team to be able to deliver what you're doing. So,
and the team needs to be paid.
But we've been so lucky in the sense that, and I know they say, again, it's a bit of a cliche, but it's the team that drives you. And we have this incredible team that are as ambitious. And even though a lot of them are young, they're so talented, they're so ambitious, and they so believe in what we're doing. And I think they believe in us as their founders, you know, that drives them, and I hope to God incentivizes them as well. Like, that is essentially the heart of everything that you're doing. And if you have that strong belief and you have the team that push you and propel you as well at the same time, what we've noticed is investors are like, actually, you've really got this really cool product, and you've done this with how many people?
Yeah.
With how much you've bootstrapped? Yeah. How in God's name have you done this? And we were even talking to this really, really high profile media person, I can't say his name, in the Web Summit in Lisbon. And he just said, you know, do you know how much it would have cost to build what you've done in America? It was like, you know, millions, basically. And it's like, going, okay, well, we have a team of 10 and four of them are part-time. And, you know, basically we've bootstrapped and done everything as every starter, you know, founder does. But it is about resilience, and it's about determination, and it's about a dog-minded approach to everything that you do. We never for a second have ever thought that this isn't going to work. It's just, okay, now we've got to this part. Now how do we get to the next point?
So interesting. Let's talk a little bit more about Web Summit, not because of Web Summit, but because of conferences in general. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people say, is it worth it to go to XYZ conference? And you've brought up that not only have you met potential investors at a conference, you mentioned media at a conference, and so, or at Web Summit, but I'm just talking about conferences in general. Basically, is a conference worth it?
Yeah. Okay. Number one, the first year we had a booth, as you said, we were allocated it because we were selected for the Alpha program. So that was fine. That was a huge opportunity to have all these people come up and you showcase your product. And
that was year one, of you going.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So like last November.
Yeah.
Then this year, because of the fact that we were Alpha program and also because we're women in tech, they basically wanted to fill the quota for women. So women in tech got free tickets, which was unbelievable. You could recommend another woman in tech.
Yeah. I remember that with Collision.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, so Web Summit does this division of Web mm-hmm. Summit called Collision. And I went, I believe in, they had one in New Orleans.
Yes, that's right.
And I think I went to the one in Vegas.
Oh, did you? That's a good choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
I'd like to go to Vegas instead of Lisbon, but no, Lisbon's good. This year we didn't. We went with the pure idea of actually making as many connections and obviously to meet investors, because the one thing I'll say about conferences is that it's the one time that you have open doors with these people. You can email them, you can try and facilitate introductions, which is normally how it goes, but it's very, very difficult to find the introduction to do the introduction. So the one time that it's, they're all in the kind of the same area and you have one opportunity to grasp their time, and that's during these times. So we were quite single minded in terms of what we wanted to do this time. So luckily with the app, we just connected with a lot of people and we set up interviews, meetings, showcase the product, investor meetings as well. But the other side of it as well was, a year ago we were told that it was nearly too soon, that we were ahead of the curve in terms of what we were doing. This year we're on the curve and we're much more interesting to people now, because it's almost like the industry is shifting and it's changing. So when we were attending different talks, there was one that was about how everything in advertising was going to become irrelevant. And it was by the head of Publicis, and there was a Facebook person talking as well. But it was incredible, because it was validation of what we're doing. They said data and storytelling, it's the vortex of media in the future. And they were literally using words that we have in our business plan. And that was incredible, because we wrote that 2 years ago,
right?
You know, and it's like when you have this idea and you think, are we crazy? Is this too far ahead? Or are we just, you know, maybe it's too soon? And when you hear these huge authorities that know what they're talking about and they're in the cusp of it, talking about what we're doing, it was so incredibly motivating. So, and I know that any founder will probably have gone through those dark times, and you're just wondering, what decisions have you made? You know, is it the right decision? Should I persevere? You're putting so many other right. people's lives at a risk, potentially.
Right, right, right.
So when you're sitting there and you're hearing all these global leaders talking about the validation of market validation of your product, it is incredible. And the fact that you have the opportunity to not only just be there, but you can ultimately talk to them and also talk to, as I said, this huge media person, it was incredible. And he was like, okay, well, listen, I know somebody in Chicago, so I think I want to facilitate, because she loves Women Tech. She loves you guys, your passion, what you're doing, your product. And it's all about those connections. But it's what you do with them. So the minute you get home, you have to obviously just work your ass off, basically.
I mean, that's the thing, right? You like have all this, like a stack mm-hmm. of business cards mm-hmm. and you're like, like mm-hmm. do you use any particular software in order to navigate through it?
No, we don't. It's literally just Excelis and just taking them off, manual, old school.
By the way, do you know a program called Shoeboxed?
No.
You send it in and they put it in for you. They scan them accurately and then they put it in a whole CRM for you.
Okay, I have to get that. Shoeboxed?
Shoeboxed, yeah.
Shoeboxed.
Yeah.
Is it with the T at the end?
Shoeboxed.
Okay, so boxed.
I found them years ago at South by Southwest.
Wow. Because one day we had like 70 at the end of a day.
Yeah.
And we're like trying to go through them. And then we have a girl who's trying to input it into Excel. And
yeah.
So no, we're old school. But on the other side of it is that you want to make sure it's done, and you want to have a personal connection with all of them. So you can't even delegate it. It has to be a personal, so it's time consuming. But even if there's two people that follow up afterwards and they make and facilitate introductions, then it's
right.
worth it.
I don't know if the word is inspiring, but it's definitely encouraging to hear that you received an ROI from going, because so many people constantly say, is it worth it? Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
And so you've said a few times that people have thought that potentially you're ahead of your curve. Mm. However, in the States, there's a ton of fashion media sites. So it's throwing me off. Like, what about Maven 46 specifically was ahead of its curve?
Using data to drive the creativity.
So even though there's a ton of fashion sites, as I said, they're all just kind of the same content that's redone. So for us, it's about using, we've created our own unique technology system in the background where we've got our own system that identifies all of the different things that we're using in our content. And all of those different tags and everything that we've ultimately bespokely created for our own site, we're using then in algorithms and various different big data visualization tools and techniques and sentiment analysis to actually uncover patterns and correlations between them, or commonalities more than anything. So when we're looking at, and this is where at the very early stages of actually rolling all of this out, because that part of the infrastructure itself has taken a year to actually create the actual background to be able right. to uncover that sort of information. But then it's to being able to, instead of all those fashion sites that are just taking images that have been sent into their email box, for us it's about uncovering trends. We want to be trendsetters, and not because we use the word trendsetters, but because we're actually uncovering trends.
Right.
So that when we're looking at our data and we're using the algorithms and we're looking at historical data and real-time data, we're able to actually identify future patterns. So for example, if we think that, you know, midi skirts were in last year, but they're actually saying mini skirts are coming in, what I want to know is that number one true? But what age group? In what area, what location, and what price what price group? I want to know exactly everything clustering.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, now you see, now it's getting interesting.
I feel like the, what's it called? River, I can't think of it. Anyway, the H&M's, Forever 21's, all those kind, I feel like they would love your data.
Oh, exactly.
They thrive on your, pennies even.
Yeah. No,
they so thrive on your
but
data.
But also,
yeah.
Most importantly, it's about looking at, so there's net-a-porters, you've got your outnets, but it's, you're able to uncover, okay, so exactly customer behavior, consumer behavior, appetite. Who is actually engaging and not engaging? But what are they engaging with, most importantly? And what price points are they engaging with? And what application are they engaging with? And everything, what we wanted to do is make sure that everything was down to a personal level so that we can uncover this information. And then when we're doing trend reports and we're writing information about what's actually happening, we're showing things that are actually, we have uncovered about our audience.
Right.
And our audience and what they're doing is more important than no information or random information
right.
about what's going on. So everything then from an advertiser point of view, and this is where it gets very important.
Yeah.
From an advertiser point of view, we can not only create native, beautiful campaigns in-house, but we have the pre-profile campaign information in advance of that. So we can actually say, well, actually, this is what our customers are behaving to. This is what they're engaging with. These are the price points. And this is what, you know, this is what we're finding is trending. You may be pushing this, but actually ankle boots are really still at the forefront,
yeah.
And it's not knee-high boots. So what you need to do is think about how you're going to market that message. And then we can come up with a really clever, creative campaign for them and then redistribute it with our clever content marketing
right.
system that we have going on based on data and distribute it to the relevant people. So then if you're thinking about an 18-year-old versus a 50-year-old and what they consume on a website would be completely different. So there's no point in sending the 18-year-old prices from Net-a-Porter that are going to be unattainable or even workwear.
Right.
We have to be more specific about the information that we're communicating. And, you know, everybody says as well that everybody's getting frustrated about looking at irrelevant content. So we want to go even further into that and go into personalization in the membership area that we're soon launching. And that will be where that not only can we recommend things based on your user experience on the site, but more importantly, we can recommend content that we know that is specific to you.
Totally.
So it's almost like a mixture between Netflix and Amazon, because
yeah.
Netflix did
yeah,
the content
yeah, yeah.
creation and redistribution. So for us, it's about that. It's kind of like the merger too. But then we want to be able to throw spikes in and throw random pieces of information, because nobody fits into a box. Just because you like fashion doesn't mean you're not interested in
right.
politics.
But bringing it back mm-hmm. to you.
Yeah.
So you've gone through this tremendous entrepreneurial journey, which mm-hmm. we've got to find out a little bit about. How do you overcome challenges?
Work through them. Literally, keep calm and sit down and really just work through them. We've had so many challenges. We've had so many obstacles in the past, and we've had an investor in early close, and then it didn't happen, and we worked 3 months on it. But it was very strange. In some ways, I think sometimes when I'm working, I'm nearly thinking about the potential of what could happen if it doesn't happen. And by the time, and Agata, this is where we're good in our yin and our yang, because she would be very optimistic about things and tell me to be really cool and calm at the time. And during that time, I might be worrying ahead of my time when I probably don't need to just yet, but it's just the way I operate. So by the time something actually happens, I've already figured out a solution. And then with her, so then I'm the calm one when it mm-hmm. actually happens, and it's vice versa. So then she might panic at the end when it actually happens, but it's okay because I've already gone through right. that. And I'm at the other side. I've right. figured out a solution. And that's kind of how we work. So it's kind of like I'm always really... I don't sleep very well, because I'm always trying to figure out things.
No, yeah. Sleep's important.
I know, sleep is important. Actually, magnesium helps, but I'm always trying to think about eventualities, in the eventuality that something doesn't actually happen. And then by the time it actually has, you just have to get on with it. You just have to pull your socks up. It doesn't matter. Whatever that obstacle is, there's a way around it. And actually, we're really good at that, I think. I have to say I'm quite proud of us in that regard, because there has been so many obstacles and challenges thrown in our way, and every single one of them, we've never dwelled on it. We just went, okay, that's fine. Move on. Next. What can we do with that? Okay, who can we talk to next that's going to change something else?
How can people connect with you?
They can connect via email, Twitter, at Tanya Grimson.
And your email?
Tanya@maven46.com. What else is there? There's LinkedIn. So yeah, LinkedIn, Tanya Grimson as well.
Awesome. Tanya, thank you so much. One, for being patient.
Not
and
at
for
all.
Being just you. Okay. Like, I would totally like want to friend you up living here. Like, you are just such a joy to be around.
Oh, such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're just awesome.
That's a lovely thing to hear on a Wednesday afternoon, I have to say.
Everybody needs to know Tanya.
Oh,
and if you guys want to meet other people like Tanya who are inspiring and encouraging and healing, go to the Women in Tech Facebook group, which you could get to directly by going to womenintechvip.com. That's womenintechvip.com. Just takes you directly to the Facebook group, so you don't have to type in a whole bunch of weird characters. And you guys know you could always tweet at Esprit Devora to say hi to me, or at Women in Tech Show. And just thank you for
thank
being
you so much
on this the Women great. In Tech podcast.
Yeah, and thank you for doing what you're doing. It's amazing that there's somebody out there as well that is pioneering what we do. So thank
Can
you for the support.
You're welcome. Can you believe we hit like top of all of iTunes?
I know, it's
insane.
Incredible. It's incredible.
I look at the picture and I'm like, what?
That's a testament again of what, you know, women in tech. And I just think it's incredible. So.
It's so cool. Well, thank you. And I will see you guys, talk to you guys in the next episode. Bye.
This episode of the Women in Tech Show is powered by UpGuard. UpGuard's discovery engine brings visibility to complex IT environments, enabling teams to quickly identify risk, confirm compliance, and make business safer. They are proud supporters and employers of incredible women in tech. To be notified every time a new Women in Tech episode is released, simply text Women in Tech to 310-872-2423. That's 310-872-2423. To support the Women in Tech Show, it's super easy. All you need to do is start doing your Amazon shopping by clicking on this link first, womenintechshow.com/Amazon. That's womenintechshow.com/Amazon. The Women in Tech Show is hosted by Esprit Devora, edited by MKW Films, show notes provided by Carl Marty, music by Jay Huffman Live. The Women in Tech Show is a WeAreTech.fm production.